Good morning. Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road. We're streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. And we are at facebook.com/radiocafe. Later on in the program, we are going to be speaking with Linda Siegel with today's legislative update as the legislature tries to draw to a close. And Robert Knott will be with us speaking of the arts. Right now, I'd like to welcome filmmaker Galen Ross. Her new documentary is called Killing Kastner, and it opens tonight at the Screen on the campus of the College of Santa Fe. And she will be there today and tomorrow answering questions after the film. It runs throughout the week. Welcome, Galen, to the Radio Cafe.
Hi, Mary Charlotte. How are you?
Good. It's great to have you on the air. It's so interesting. A couple of years ago, I had Anna Porter on this program who wrote the book Kastner's Train. Now you are making a documentary about this Hungarian Jewish Holocaust rescuer, Rezo Kastner. How did you come across his story?
Well, it was really interesting. I mean, actually, the film has been in the works for over 8 years. I mean, that's how long it took from the initial filming. But I started to hear about the story, first heard about the story around 1997. I was producing a film about the Swiss banks and the Holocaust accounts. And a woman told me at the time that she was rescued, saved on the Kastner transport. And I hadn't a clue what she was talking about. I didn't know about this rescue train, and I didn't know about Kastner. And I thought how incredible it was that there was, at the end of the war, when the worst killings in Hungary, probably of the Holocaust, were taking place by Eichmann, 12,000 Jews a day were being deported to Auschwitz, that in the middle of this, there was a Jew who negotiated with Eichmann for the last million Jews of Europe and was able to negotiate for almost 2,000 people on a rescue train that ended up safely in Switzerland, and everybody lived. And we didn't know anything about this. I mean, it was not in our history books. It was not something that was a typical, you know, a conversation in the Holocaust. Nobody understood who he was, what he did, and certainly not in America. In Israel, yes, but not in America.
And that's a whole story of its own, which we'll talk about in a second. But I just have to, let's talk for a moment about Kastner himself. He was such a brilliant person and such an incredible negotiator. He spoke absolutely fluent German,
yes,
to the point where he could negotiate with Eichmann as if he were German, even though Eichmann knew that he was Jewish. And he made it seem like he came from a world where there was a lot of power and clout, and he was just making it up as he went along in order to save all these people's lives.
He was. I mean, what was important to understand and is important to understand is that Kastner was a nobody. He was a member of a little tiny Zionist rescue group in Budapest that was doing work to rescue and save people as all through the war, as people were fleeing into what was then an unoccupied Hungary. When Hungary became occupied in March 1944, this group was in a position to understand that negotiation and bribery was a possibility. But what Kastner did was he saw a wedge and an opportunity, and Eichmann presented this offer to this little tiny Zionist group of trading, which is remarkable in itself, 10,000 trucks that he wanted from the Allies for the last million Jews of Europe. I mean, of course, the Allies weren't going to give any trucks to the Nazis. But Kastner, who played as if he had something to bargain with, and he really had absolutely nothing except perhaps his arrogance and his belief that he could try, negotiated for all these lives. I mean, it's incredible. And he wasn't negotiating and talking to Eichmann as an equal. I mean, that's very important to understand. He could have been killed at any time. This was totally an unequal negotiation. As a matter of fact, in Kastner's report, he writes that Eichmann often threatened to send him to Auschwitz. He never knew when he walked into Gestapo headquarters whether he would come out alive. And he continued this negotiation. This train went to Switzerland, but actually ended up being held ransom in Bergen-Belsen, a concentration camp, for several months, until from July to December for many people. Kastner continued the negotiations. When the train was released, finally, and again they were released with no trucks from the Allies, just promises of money, promises, I think maybe a tractor came. It was totally negotiating with air. Kastner continued and stayed in Germany, went to Germany, and continued to negotiate for other survivors. I think there's like 18,000 now attributed to Kastner who went to a labor camp, elderly, women, the sick, people who normally would not be living.
Yeah, and he had them sent to labor camps instead of to concentration
camps.
And they just squeaked by, got through the war, and survived.
Exactly. I mean, these were the people. I mean, normally a labor camp, they expected to receive men. And what they received were absolutely people who couldn't work. And that is now attributed to Kastner's negotiations with the Nazis, keeping people alive, pretending that he had some bargaining chip to have. And I mean, we have to understand that this was a negotiation that happened at the end of the war. It's when the
right.
Germans needed things. The Nazis were losing the war. They were looking for money. They were looking for supplies. And Himmler was also looking. For a separate truce with the Allies at the time. So they were looking for alibis too. There were all sorts of parallel negotiations and motivations going on. It's a fascinating, fascinating episode.
This man must have had nerves of steel. When I think about what he did, I just, you know, clutch my blanket. You know, it's, I mean, can you imagine being in Germany, being with these Gestapo people, and negotiating with the full force of confidence instead of being terrified, just shaking in your shoes?
Well, it's incredible, and you know, I think what you're saying is very important, because people who didn't understand the story, and some who still don't, who were detractors of Kastner, believe that he was one of them. You know, he was acting as if he was free to go where he wanted, at liberty, and in fact, this was part of the strategy that Kastner had. But that he went in and continued. What else was he doing there but rescue? He didn't profit from it. He was not winning anything except lives. I mean, this is a person, he could have gone with his family to Switzerland when the train arrived there. Instead, he went back and continued to save people. He had a certain personality that people attribute to this kind of belief in himself, pretending he was somebody when he was a nobody.
We're talking to Galen Ross about the film Killing Kastner. Now, the film Killing Kastner has a kind of double meaning. Kastner, after the war, ends up in Israel, and A, isn't recognized, and B, has a lot of detractors who call him a Nazi collaborator.
Yes.
What was that all about?
Well, the end of the war and the shadow of the Holocaust was really a terrible, terrible time, and it was, I'd say, the pervasive, the world that Israelis, that Palestinians who became Israelis found themselves in. And what happened there was incredible guilt and blame and shame among Jews who survived, but their families didn't survive, their communities didn't survive. And they were looking for people to blame. So yes, they could blame the Germans, but they also blamed their own. And Kastner was, in a way, his crime was that he lived, is that he was there as a witness, in a way, to what other Jews couldn't do, what other Jews couldn't save their own community. And he could. Now, the fact that he was of a particular kind and time and an episode, I mean, Kastner himself identified himself as a hero of circumstances. And if the circumstances were different, he probably couldn't have done what he had done. But he found that opportunity at the end of the war. But this was time in Israel when people didn't even talk about the Holocaust, really. It was quite amazing. And what they knew of it, Israel was trying to make a new model for themselves of heroes, and negotiation was not one of them. So people whose families did not survive in Hungary saw Kastner as a rescuer, but rescued not their family, so
right.
They blamed him.
Yeah. So instead of he should have rescued a million people instead of the tens of thousands that he did.
It was quite incredible that one man is responsible for warning and rescuing a million people. And the fact that this became his responsibility and his legacy is also remarkable, and the illogic is breathtaking.
It's so post-traumatic. I was watching the film and I was thinking, this is, you know, Israel then and now, post-traumatic country.
Yes. And it was the survivors themselves in Hungary, the survivors who saw the rescue of Kastner's group and the people. And, of course, they didn't realize how many were saved in the labor camp at that point. I mean, this information didn't come out until many years after, and still now. So they looked to Kastner. And, you know, it's interesting when we talk about Schindler, who is, you know, very famous, not Jewish, but he saved what we now know as Schindler's List. People don't talk about the people who didn't make the list, the millions of Poles who were not on the list. They only talk about Schindler as saving the list. But nobody blames Schindler for the millions who went to the concentration camps and died. But they did for Kastner. So anyway, Kastner was part of the government of Israel at this time, and the government, there were detractors, and one in particular who published these accusations that Kastner only rescued his own kind and profited from the money, that the bribery, and all these other accusations. And the government couldn't have it, so they sued. They sued this Malkiel Greenwald to prevent this kind of libel from being tainting the government, and Kastner, of course. But the trial turned. I mean, libel trials are dangerous to go into, and the trial turned, and there was a brilliant lawyer who turned the trial against Kastner, and then Kastner was the one who was condemned instead, and he was condemned as this horrible, horrible verdict called the man who sold his soul to the devil.
Right.
And this was the verdict that the country and everyone understood and became his legacy, even though the verdict was overturned by the Supreme Court a few years later. But this is what stuck.
And between the time the verdict was handed down and the time it was overturned, Kastner was murdered.
Yes.
And you in the film, and this is just amazing to me, found his murderer and have him in the documentary.
Well, it was quite a journey to tell this story. And you know, when we understand this assassination, I mean, having that verdict really in Israel at that time, calling a Jew a collaborator with the Nazis and selling his soul to the devil, was tantamount to a death sentence. I mean, he was the most hated man in Israel, even though he saved these thousands of lives. People didn't understand what he did. And then the extremist group decided to kill Kastner as an example for what they considered a whole collaborative government. I mean, it's really about Israeli politics, but Kastner became the target. As many people said, you know, he was the weakest link and they could get him. And so his assassin was a 22-year-old guy, as many of these, you know, as they are, these young people who end up being turned by ideologues and politics and wanting to be heroes. I mean,
right.
The film talks about...
Think suicide bombers.
Exactly. It doesn't matter, you know, if you're Jewish or Christian or Muslim or whatever you are. It's always the young people who end up, you know, pulling the gun, you know, blowing themselves up. The ones who are writing the tracks, the ones who are doing the philosophies behind this are usually not arrested and they go
right.
on. But it's the young people who want to be something. And he was. And he, remarkably, he was released with his two others. He pulled the trigger. He was the assassin, but there were two others who were convicted. They were released after 7 years. The government wanted this to go away. So he spent most of his life outside of prison.
Right.
And I approached him to talk about this, and it took a while. And he... Finally, I think, wanted to have his story told as well. And yeah, I don't ever condone what he did, nor am I sympathetic. But I think this is an important part of the history of Israel. It was certainly an important part of the episode of how Kastner was killed, and the politics and the bitterness that was experienced then. And he's very, very articulate about his transformation, which is sort of universal, of how a young man wanting to do something ended up becoming an extremist.
We're talking to Galen Ross. Her film is called Killing Kastner. It opens tonight at the Screen at the, on the campus of the College of Santa Fe. We've got just a moment or two left, but the, I mean, the, a couple of things have come out. Your film has just come out. The book by Anna Porter, Kastner's Train. There was another book by a survivor of Kastner's Train that includes some of the history of Kastner. There's some footage in the film about people from survivors from Kastner's Train really kind of lobbying to have his name brought back. Is he going to go down in history, do you think, as a genuine and revered Holocaust rescuer?
Well, I think that the time has come. I mean, I think it's interesting how after 50 years, certainly in America, that in English, that the talk and the conversation about what Kastner did is something that people want to know about. And new research and new archives and scholarship has pretty much said, yes, Kastner rescued thousands of Jews. I mean, you may not like the way he did it, but the Holocaust was a period of time of choices when there were no choices to be made. And whatever one thinks they could have done at the time or should have done at the time is absolutely ridiculous, because nobody was there. Nobody understood the kind of impossibility it was to save lives and to survive. And here was somebody who did it, and it's time the story. And also the survivors, I would just say that Ladislas Loeb, it's L-O-B, his book is the one you can get on Amazon as well now. And there are survivors of Kastner. I mean, we have one in Santa Fe, Tom Margetin, who was with his family, was rescued. I mean, these people survived. There are generations that have gone on. We have to acknowledge and respect their stories. And it's remarkable that nobody has asked them, you know, how they lived. And I think it's Yad Vashem in Israel, which is the largest, I guess, memorial to the Holocaust, has now got Kastner on the wall, and they talk about him as a rescuer. And so it's time, you know, that the Holocaust Museum in America is doing that as well, and other institutions, and that people, it's, you know, whether you're Jewish or you're not Jewish, this is an incredible, dramatic rescue story.
It's, and the film is terrific. Anna Porter's book, which as I said, we had on the, we interviewed Anna Porter a couple of years ago on this show, is fantastic. The movie Killing Kastner is tonight and tomorrow night at 7:15, and Galen Ross will be with us there. It's also running on Sunday morning at 10:40, and then Monday through Thursday of next week at 1:30 in the afternoon. Many opportunities to see the film. Galen Ross, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Linda Siegel is on deck. We'll be right back. I'd like now to welcome Linda Siegel, joining us by phone for today's legislative update. Welcome, Linda.
Well, good morning, Mary Charlotte.
So, is the session over?
Well, the session is over for the moment. They couldn't reach an agreement on the most important issues. The budget, yes. It really started out in the beginning of the session when the House passed a bill, House Bill 2, that included a $300 million tax increase. They sent it over to the Senate, and the Senate would not go along with it, and they couldn't. They were negotiating the last week and even up into the last night, and they just couldn't get closer because the Senate didn't really want to do that level of tax increase. In fact, what the Senate did was they agreed to try to pass about $180 million of tax increases. The problem for many people with the budget was the almost $100 million cut to education in the Senate versions of the budget.
And that, of course, is something that we hold sacred in the state and really do not want to have any cuts to education at all.
Well, absolutely. And if you just look at the Santa Fe public schools, That would require about an $8 million cut. It would mean school closures. It would mean layoffs. It would mean larger classrooms. Albuquerque, with that kind of cut, would have had to cut $36 million from the APS budget. So these things would devastate our education system. And the House was holding strong. Representative Rick Miera, who's the chair of the Education House Education Committee, and Senator Cynthia Nava, they were very strong on, we can't take these kinds of cuts to education.
And so where do we stand?
Well, we stand. The governor yesterday said special session, and it starts next Wednesday at noon. Hopefully, they'll be working together before then and try to come up with some kind of compromise. This is very important. One positive thing that passed out of the last session, which will help us right now, is we had a capital outlay bill, and this bill would revert about $150 million of stalled capital outlay projects to the general fund so it can be used to plug the holes in this year's budget. And that was an essential bill to pass, and that didn't pass until the last night because of disagreements.
So the question, for example, there was a proposed tax on junk food, but somehow tortillas slipped into the junk food list and it became a big cause célèbre or whatever. I mean, a big problem because that, whatever happened, did they take the tortillas out?
Well, what that bill was sort of a compromise between those people who wanted to do a full-blown let's bring the food tax back and those who wanted to no, don't touch the food tax. And what it was, Senator Bernadette Sanchez carried a bill that if it was within the WIC definition, the Women and Children, that food program that's a federal program, that includes, quote, wholesome foods, fruits, vegetables, milk. But if you have white flour or white tortillas, it's not included in that. And that bill actually got passed the Senate and got tabled in the House. The other, and that was what part of what the Senate was counting on to plug the holes. And the other tax bill the Senate was counting on was a tobacco tax worth about $35 million. That got tabled the last day in House Taxation and Revenue. So everything fell apart in the last day, and then they just couldn't come any closer with the education issue.
Well, maybe the whole entire legislature will go home, get some sleep, and sort of start thinking again. I mean, they're going to have to come up with a compromise, no?
Right, and hopefully they can do it within a few days, because this every time we have a special session, it costs us taxpayers $50,000 a day. And this is the first time since 1984 that the legislature has not been able to do a budget within the time frame, either the 30-day session or the 60-day session.
So we will have an update on that as things progress. Meanwhile, there are some bills that passed, some bills that didn't pass. Domestic partnership, close but no cigar.
Yes, tabled in Senate Finance Committee again.
You know, as we've discussed, why this is a financial issue is slightly mysterious, but the votes weren't there. What else passed and didn't pass that is of interest?
Well, the ethics bill, one of the ethics bills that we've all been talking about, the one to form an ethics commission where if there are complaints or problems, it gets referred to this commission and the commission has authority to do something about it. That bill passed the House but died in the Senate. And the Senate had its own version, which I believe didn't even pass the Senate floor. Another important bill, this was on the agenda of Governor Richardson, was the Hispanic Education Act. And this was not something that required additional appropriation. It's about trying to focus programs and create programs that really help our Hispanic students, because right now in New Mexico, they have the lowest graduation rate. That did pass, but there was incredible discussion, and you see some of the racism of people come out in these kinds of discussions.
Very interesting. There were a couple of environmental bills that did pass. We talked to Sandy Buffett from the talking about environment.
Whatever.
Yeah, conservation voters in New Mexico.
Yes.
A few days ago. But some passed, some failed, and an uphill struggle, especially during a 30-day session.
Oh, absolutely. One positive bill in the health arena was a bill that requires insurance companies to use 85% of their premium revenue paying that out on health claims.
Really?
Yes. That bill's been up for about 4 or 5 years, and they made some compromises. Finally, that bill has passed, and I'm sure the governor will sign it.
That's very interesting. So 15% goes to overhead and profits, which, ladies and gentlemen, is still very high compared to many other countries, but that's another story.
Yes, and there aren't too many insurance companies that are going bankrupt.
No, indeed.
Insurance, anyway.
Anything else before we go?
Well, a couple of bills in the education arena. One that I think is very important is teaching financial literacy to our children. That's part of the problem that's resulted over the last year or two, that people just don't understand how to manage their finances, what to invest in, and how to buy a house. So that's going to be a requirement in our public schools.
And also how to see when you're getting ripped off.
Yes.
Linda Siegel is with us on Friday mornings during the legislative session. With the legislative update, we're going to be doing an update, a longer update after next week, but we will check in during the special session and find out what's going on.
Great. Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Thank you so much for being with us, Linda Siegel. Robert Knott is on deck. We'll be right back. I'd like now to welcome Robert Knott.
You have gorgeous blue eyes.
This is radio. Nobody can see colors.
They are beautiful. I didn't realize how beautiful your eyes were.
Thank
and I
you.
Have blue eyes, too.
You have blue eyes, too.
I saw you in the neighborhood. You sure are looking good with your blue eyes. Pretty blue eyes. Remember that song, Steve Lawrence?
No, but that's all right. Robert Knott is the associate. Are you still associate
with
the Pasatiempo?
No. I'm a staff writer on the city side. I'm focusing
you're
on
staff
education
writer of the
now that the legislation's coming to an end.
You're the education
still covering
reporter.
Film industry stuff, and if they send me out to chase a fire, I'll probably do that, too.
Okay.
But I'll still provide a movie reviewer column to Pasatiempo every week. I'll have a couple of Oscar-related stories in there on the 5th. And it's great. It's a good move. I need to get back in touch with writing, and I'm trying my best, and I'm still sort of stumbling, but that's the story. So as long as you want to keep me on Fridays, and
I want to keep you on Fridays.
Right. Well, thank you.
The Pasatiempo is the Friday arts magazine in the Santa Fe New Mexican, that publication for which Robert Knott writes. What's the cover story?
It's interesting because I believe you had some discussion about Killian Kastner, right?
Yes.
And that's an incredible movie playing over at
the screen.
And Jonathan Richards did a great profile himself in today's PASA with the filmmaker. And interestingly enough, TheaterWorks doing Emile's Enemies, which is Douglas Huff's play about the pastor Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who stood up to Hitler in the early days, in the early 30s. And I don't know the play. I haven't read it yet. I do hope to go see it. Probably be next weekend. But TheaterWork got the cover story. They always provide us with great images, I have to say.
Yeah.
Occasionally people say TheaterWork seems to get a lot of covers, but they always give us the stuff we need when we need it, so that's always just a note for people.
And they do a good job. It's a very good professional company that does a lot of interesting work, stuff you never would have thought of seeing.
I better mention when and where. It opens tonight at 7:30 at the James A. Little Theater, New Mexico School for the Deaf, 1060 Cerritos Road. Runs for 2 weekends. That includes a Thursday night show, 2 p.m. Sunday. Here's a phone number, 471-1799, and yes, you have to pay to get in, but they also keep their prices pretty affordable.
Now, we have a great event coming up on Monday night, and we're also going to do a ticket giveaway for
it.
You know what that is?
It's the nude thing. Go ahead.
It's the Yes Men.
Oh, the Yes Men.
You know about the Yes
Men? Oh, the Yes Men at SFAI.
Yeah.
Excellent. Rob DeWalt did a story on them. Of course, they're terrific. Keep going.
Yeah, no, they are at the Lenzik on Monday night. It's a benefit for the Santa Fe Art Institute, which does terrific, very grassroots work and all sorts of work. And they are having the Yes Men in to screen their film called The Yes Men Fix the World. This is a two-man kind of activist, culture jammer, very interesting comedy. They're sort of satirical comedy and activism and just sort of crazy, absurdist humor all rolled into one. And we had them on the air earlier this week. We had one of the Yes Men on the air.
Tackling topics that aren't always so funny, actually.
Tackling topics like the poisoning of untold thousands of human beings in Bhopal, India, and the company that poisoned them through their chemical plant never made any restitution of any kind whatsoever, nor did they even clean up the plant. And they deal with this in ways that bring it to attention of a lot of people who wouldn't otherwise know about it.
Yeah,
so we're
great.
Doing a ticket giveaway. Is Mary Lynn on the air?
I'm here.
Yay.
Yes, yes.
Mary
and
Lynn.
We have one ticket and we have one request that if you have won a ticket over the past month, please refrain from calling so that someone else has a chance.
Excellent.
Okay,
thanks.
I won't call.
Okay, Fort, you haven't won anything. You've been here talking to me. You couldn't call.
Oh, you see. Okay, 7 o'clock Monday night.
7 o'clock Monday night.
So you got to call what number to get the ticket.
Okay, third caller. It's always a third caller.
How come?
Because, okay.
Do the fifth caller. Do something different.
Okay, the
Every
fifth
time I listen
caller.
To your show,
yeah, we're
going to
make
caller.
More work for Mary Lynn.
Okay, we've had two calls already.
Okay, so the fifth caller, 428-1393. No, 428. What is our number? 428-1382.
This burns me up. I got to be honest with you guys.
What?
I'm the first caller so many times and I never get the damn thing.
Well, that's because you just dial so quickly.
This is strange because you know what? I'm doing a house sit and there's Dial soap there and I haven't used Dial soap since I was a little boy.
Yeah, dial, I suppose, is an anachronistic verb. I suppose you should say you press buttons so quickly. That's why you're always the first caller.
I wish I had one of those old phones. I may have.
A rotary phone. Anyway.
All right. Yes Men, by the way, is even though SFAI is presenting it, it's at the Lenzik, 7 o'clock Monday night. Call the Lenzik.
988-1234.
See Rob DeWalt's story in today's Pasta Tampa.
See the cover of The Reporter this week. They
That's
are
right.
On the cover,
they
the,
did.
The
Actually,
cover
they story
of The Reporter. They
too.
Did it, yep. And you can go to my podcast. And you can also just go to, I think it's theyesmen.org. You can Google them. They're hilarious. And the movie is just brilliant. Anyway,
now,
what else?
What do you know about David Bowie and Let's Dance?
I don't.
Let's dance.
I remember the song kind
Put
of.
Put on your red shoes and dance the blues. I was in Europe when that song came out. Did I ever dance? I didn't wear no red shoes, but the girls did. Let's Dance is the name of the Santa Fe Community Orchestra swing dance. It's going to be Saturday night, not the loneliest night of the week. It's going to be at 7 o'clock, although you can go at 6 o'clock for dance instructions provided by Dance Station. You only have to pay a specific donation. I can't tell you the price, but it ain't too offensive. And it's going to be at the Santa Fe Community Convention Center, 201 West Marcy. Here's the phone number, 988-2550. Cash bar, affordable grub, silent auction. Let's Dance. It does a heart good with special guests, the Santa Fe Great Big Jazz Band. So that's a dance concert down at the convention hall. Have you ever danced there?
Yes, I think I have.
Oh, I see.
I think there was a salsa thing there.
The old dance there? Hall, the old convention center or the new?
Well, I certainly danced at the old one. Tito Puente was there back in
Whoa.
The day.
Well, I may go there Saturday night just for a little
No,
bit,
but the
so
new one,
happening.
Too. Seriously Funny is episode 2 of this new program with Ron Bloomberg and many other very funny actors.
That's right.
Episode 2 runs tomorrow morning at 8:30. We have to let people know what's going on
Absolutely.
KSFR.
If you're a Billy the Kid fan, Mark
yes.
Gardner. Mark Gardner wrote To Hell on a Fast Horse, Billy the Kid, Pat Garrett, and the epic chase to justice in the Old West. It's a really interesting dual biography of the pair. Mark Lee Gardner from Colorado. He'll be in town late next week at 7 o'clock Thursday. He'll present Billy the Kid in Story and Song out at Rancho de los Golondrinas. They're hosting it, but it's actually at the Santuario de Guadalupe downtown. And then at noon next Friday, he's going to do one of those Brown Power and Brown Bags lunches over at the Fray Angelico Chavez History Library on Washington Avenue. It's free. Bring a lunch. See subtext in today's Pasta Tiempo near the book review, which is about Jane Goodall's book, Hope for Animals in the World, How Endangered Species Are Being Rescued from the Brink. That's Sandy Nelson's book review in today's Pasta Tiempo.
Pasta Tiempo. And then Eve Ensler tomorrow
I was just
night.
About to go there. Take it away.
Tomorrow night at the Lenzik. She is going to be there. She has a new book out, which we talked about a couple of days ago on the show, called I Am an Emotional Creature, The Secret Life of Girls Around the World. And that is going to be a reading with Santa Fe teenagers, teenage girls.
That's true, including one that was in my Warehouse 21 show. I'm very happy for them. 7:30 Saturday at the Lenzik. So much is at the Lenzik.
So much is at the Lenzik. And Mark Singleton is an author who has, believe it or not, a scholarly book on yoga. It's called Yoga Body, The Origins of Modern Posture Practice. And he is speaking, I believe, today at 5 o'clock at Spondorama Yoga. You may want to double check on that. Do you have the listing for that?
I don't have it in front of me. Yoga. When is it?
Spondorama Yoga Center. I believe it's today at 5 in the afternoon.
Well, gee, I don't know if we even have that. I do have the fundraiser for Haiti tonight, 5 o'clock, Wild Oats Community, Dancing and Drumming.
Excellent.
Suggested donation. It's in the community room over there in St. Francis. There's also a fundraiser for Meow Wolf's upcoming theater show, The Moon is to Dance On, 9 o'clock at the VFW poster on Montezuma Avenue. Very small fee to get in. And there's St. John's College Dean's Lecture Series, The Two Lives of Compassion in Early India.
Oh, I just found it. Sorry, it's Spandarama Yoga Studio on Early Street at 5:30 today, not 5
okay.
o'clock.
So there you go. Meanwhile, what else has happened tonight? Well, you can go over to the Eli Levin Studio at 830 Canyon Road and see the Joe Batiste Myth Paintings, 4 o'clock reception. Show runs through the end of the month. You can run over to Lou Allen Galleries at the Rail Yard, 1613 Paseo de Peralta, and see Jimmy Gleason, Linked by Light Paintings, reception 5:30. There's a story in today's Pasatiempo. And you can go over to Meow Wolf for their Happy Birthday Meow Wolf show at 5 o'clock. Yay! Happy Birthday Meow Wolf. You can also go to Warehouse 21, 1614 Paseo de Peralta for the news. Good or bad, it's still the news.
It is still the news.
Of. That's a salon art exhibit of work by Southwestern Association of Indian Arts and the Humboldt Collective Artists. Music, performances, 5 o'clock, no charge, all ages tonight at Warehouse 21.
And on Monday night also at 6 o'clock, the film The War on Kids, it's a terrific documentary.
I saw it.
Did you see it?
I did. I interviewed the director yesterday, and I know you did as well.
Yeah, we did, and we talked to him here on the show. It's at the Educational Services Center at 610 Alta Vista on Monday night at 6 o'clock, sponsored by the Santa Fe High School Parent Teacher Committee. And, boy, it's a very interesting and very provocative movie and worth discussing.
Now, this interests me because I want to talk to you a little bit about this.
Yeah, talk to me. Talk to me. Tell me what's on your mind.
Alan Ball wrote a play, Tell Me What's Inside Your Mind. Every time I do that, I talk about women or Sasquatch. I get thrown off the show.
You talk about the underwear ads in the PASA.
I hardly ever talk about the underwear
you
ads.
You talk about them constantly.
I occasionally point one out because they're beautiful, and they grab you. They stimulate you.
Yeah, whatever.
It's like, you know, whenever they're trying to get you into massage, they show like a woman, a beautiful woman, you know, topless, laying face down. I mean, what are you supposed to do? Oh, that reminds me.
What are you supposed to do? That is the question.
I swear this is true. There was an ad for Calgon Bath, and this lady got in the back of a limo, and there was a limo driver. I remember if anybody remembers this. And he's driving, and he presses a button, and a bath comes out in the back, and she climbs in the bath. And I was going crazy as a 7-year-old. I was like, this is naughty.
I bet you are. Why are we talking about this? There was
okay. So. See,
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. What's on your mind? Tell me what's on your mind.
Alan Ball's 1993 play. Five women wearing the same dress, about five bridesmaids in Tennessee at a friend's wedding. Opens tonight at the College of Santa Fe Greer Garson Theater, 8 p.m. tonight. Runs for 2 weekends. You got to pay to get in. 473-6511. But I'm just thinking, like, how could five women wear the same dress? Were they like Siamese twins multiplied with an extra one, or were they sharing the same dress, which means four of them are in various states of undress? What's your viewpoint on this?
I don't have one.
You go on for 7 minutes about the yes men. I ask you a little question about five women wearing the same dress.
Well, I mean, you're asking me a question to which I don't have the answer. So I can either make stuff up, which is called bull something, or I can say I don't know. And the honest answer is I don't know. But I do know that there is a lecture by Charles Bergman called China, Monster, Menace, or Fragile Superpower, tomorrow from 3 to 5 at the Unitarian Universalist Church, sponsored by the Santa Fe Council on International Relations. I know that.
Excellent. If you like Irish and Scottish music, big band stuff, not big band like 1940s swing, mind you, the Royal Regiment of Scotland is going to be joining the Band of the Irish Guards at 7:30 Thursday at the Lenzic, courtesy of the Santa Fe Concert Association. Michael Wade Simpson, a new freelancer for Pasatiempo, wrote a piece in today's PASA. Got to pay to get in, 988-1234. I have a feeling this is going to be a really vibrant, exciting night of music. And interestingly enough, the Scottish members of this are still fighting in Afghanistan. They're actual soldiers. But there's a nice little piece. Head on over there. I imagine they're going to play some favorites. I don't know if they're going to play Danny Boy, which I will sing for you when we get to our St. Paddy's Day show.
That's coming up any moment.
It is?
In a few weeks.
Oh, you're right. That'd be like March 12th, right?
I think it's the 17th.
But the March 12th show, because that's a Friday.
So you have
to prepare. All right, I'll sing it for you. Because how Irish are you?
Not that I know of at all.
Okay, well, I come from Irish-German stock, so. Okay. Oscar season's coming up, and Oscar-nominated short films are playing at the screen. It's a mixed bag, according to Bob Benziker, our film reviewer, but they're always sort of interesting, and go check them out. The Last Station opens at Regal de Vargas. John Richards gave it a review in today's Pasta Tiempo. You've got The White Ribbon over at CCA. Looks like a very strange, mysterious, wonderful picture. You've got, we already mentioned, The Yes Men on Monday night. And still playing out there, if you want to go see them, is The Blind Side with Sandra Bullock, Academy Award nominated, at Regal North. Avatar still at Regal 14. Crazy Hearts over at de Vargas. I got to go see that this weekend. And The Goofy, It's Complicated, is down at Regal North.
Is that any good? I haven't heard much about it.
And The Wolfman, which I thought was really mediocre, is at Regal 14. But my view isn't going to stop people from going to pay money to see it. So,
there's Killing Kastner. You can go see. That's a good documentary.
It is. And a really good piece by Jonathan Richards, a profile piece today of Galen Ross in the picture. And you had a good interview on it, too. First half I heard before I got over here and started to look through Pasta Tiempo. What else? What else do you need to know? What time is it?
It is 8:53.
Wow, time flies when you're just sitting here talking with you.
When we're having fun.
Cinderella at Capitol High. Everybody loves that story. Mm-hmm. It's at 2 and 7 o'clock tomorrow. It's at 7 o'clock tonight in the Brian Font Theater, Capitol High.
Aschenputtel. That's the German name.
Really? Did you ever see the Jerry Lewis version, Cinderfella?
No.
Huh, okay. Let me see. Doña Teresa Aguilera y Roche, An Intrigue in the Palace of the Governors, is a lecture by Fran Levine in concert with the exhibition Santa Fe Found, Fragments of Time, 2 o'clock. New Mexico History Museum. I was just in there yesterday. Love that place.
That's a great place.
113 Lincoln Avenue. It's by museum admission. Somebody bumped into me, but they were kind enough to touch me afterwards, and that always makes me feel good. Oh, plus a nice lady. Winter Storytelling with Joe Hayes. I got to confirm this. 10 to 4 tomorrow. Clear light. 851 West San Mateo Street, 989-9590. Santa Fe Artist Market tomorrow, 9 to 1, near site. Santa Fe Farmers Market at 1607 Paseo de Peralta tomorrow, 9 to 1 o'clock. Check these things out. Meanwhile, Parted Waters, Teatro Paraguas, continues at Teatro Paraguas Studio on Richards Lane. Benchwarmers 9, which I still have not seen, is over at the Santa Fe Playhouse on de Vargas Street. And Georgia O'Keeffe's Readers Club has On Photography, a discussion with Susan Sontag at 6 o'clock Tuesday, free, Education Annex, Grand Avenue.
A discussion with Susan Sontag?
Yeah.
What is that supposed to mean?
I don't know.
Okay.
I haven't researched it that thoroughly. I'm just trying to put the little blurbs in.
I believe Susan Sontag is no longer with us.
No, pardon me, but it's her book about On Photography.
Okay, thank you.
It's about her book from the 70s called On Photography. And it is the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum's Free Readers Club discussion of the book. So
hey,
there.
Did you talk about the tasting of heritage meats?
Why the hell would I talk about? This is the art show. What do you mean the tasting of heritage?
Well,
meats?
Cuisine is a form of art. So tomorrow from 5 to 7 at the Santa Fe Farmers Market, sponsored by Slow Food Santa Fe, is the tasting of heritage meats. And for more information, call 310-2628 or go to slowfoodsantafe.com.
And so far, by the way, I'm already on page 30.
Is that so wrong?
Of Pasta Tiempo, and I don't see one lingerie ad, so don't tell me I go through these things.
You do. You're going through it right now looking for them.
I'm just trying to prove to you that they're not there.
My point is proven.
Well, it's not.
It's like the little old ladies who went through the very first dictionary looking for bad words when it was published.
That reminds me of a story I have to tell you later off the air about the first time I bought a Playboy magazine and the lady behind the counter, what she said to me.
Oh, boy.
Okay, Chopin. What do you know about that guy?
Chopin?
Yeah.
In what sense? What's great romantic composer.
All right, good. Right. Played the piano quite a bit, right? 7:30 Tuesday. You want to learn more about this guy? United Church of Santa Fe, Joe Illick from Santa Fe Concert Association.
Yay, Joe Illick.
Is going to be talking about him and perhaps performing some of his most popular pieces like I've Grown Accustomed to Your Face and Pretty Blue Eyes. Tickets are available at the Lensic, 988-1234. You got to pay to get in. Call.
You're miseducating the people.
I do that sometimes jokingly. I do it sometimes because I just woke up and I run in here and I don't always have time to research stuff, and I acknowledge that. So Chopin didn't write those songs. Believe me, he wrote, Do take my hand, I'm a stranger in Paris. Did he do that one? What do you do? Name like one popular tune that guy wrote.
It's not about popular tunes. It's about the classical music tradition, you know, sonatas and stuff like that.
Oh,
and
I know Sinatra. Doobie doobie doo. You're Mary Charlotte. I'm in love with you. Okay, anyway, I'm teasing around, but, you know, Chopin, he's a classical guy. Go over there and see the show. Coming up in a week or two is things like Two Women Dancing. Joe Turk is a good story on Joe Turk in today's PASA. Garcia Street Books tonight, 5 o'clock. He's going to be talking about his book, The Raven's Gift, The Scientist.
Oh, thank you for reminding
absolutely
me.
Absolutely. A shaman and their remarkable journey through the Siberian wilderness. 5 o'clock at Garcia Street Books tonight.
It's not tonight.
It's
next week, because I'm gonna have him on the air on Monday. So I believe it's
thank you, it's Thursday night.
Thursday of next week.
Okay, we got it right. 5 o'clock Thursday, Garcia Street Books.
Yeah.
Garcia Street often does Friday night things. I just messed up. So I got it right. It's Thursday.
It's Thursday of next week, and it's an incredible book called The Raven's Gift. This guy is a scientist, and he was paddling a kayak off the coast of Siberia, ends up in a village where a 96-year-old woman shaman ends up healing him. I mean, it's an incredible story.
Paddling that thing. I'd rather paddle a hot Teutonic woman.
Anyway, no, it's a great book, and he's a wonderful speaker, and you will hear him on this show on Monday. Robert Knott is with the Paso Tiempo and the Santa Fe New Mexican. He's the education reporter. He writes movie columns. He is with us here every Friday speaking of the art, and he's just a great guy.
Well, thank you, pretty boy.
Even though I give you a hard time, which is not nearly as much as you give me a hard time.
So I can hold you in the pale moonlight because I love you.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We are broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org. Podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, and there's a Bernese Mountain Dog outside on the patio of the Santa Fe Radio.
Stop kissing me. Do the show.
That's you, not me. That was a cute dog. We are podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org. Thanks to Santa Fe's Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. My email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Mary Lynn LeBlanc, engineer today. She's
who
fabulous.
Caller number five, I wonder. What?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm sure we got them. I'm sure we gave away the ticket giveaway. So anyway, that's just about all for today. We've
okay,
got 30 seconds left. Robert Knott, it's always wonderful to see you, truly.
Pretty blue eyes, won't you come out tonight so I can dance with you in the pale moonlight because I want you. Pretty blue eyes. You've got gorgeous blue eyes, girl. I'll see you around, lady. You going to go to Let's Dance
vista.
And Dance or not?
I don't know. We'll see.
Well, okay.
Hasta la vista, baby.
And adios.
Ciao.
9 a.m. in Santa Fe. These stories coming up from KSFR News. After telling lawmakers they must reconvene on our state's budget next Wednesday, Governor Richardson leaves Santa Fe today for Chicago, where he'll give the keynote address to the United States Hispanic Leadership Conference. Pete Domenici Jr. is the subject of criticism from two prominent New Mexico law enforcement officials. The New Mexico Attorney General's office is advising citizens of a tech scam alleging to be from Santa Fe's Guadalupe Credit Union. And an unsettled